Welcome to another edition of the Media Chwits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, along with Rafat Ali, the founder of Paid Content. Welcome back from your trip, Rafat.
Thanks, Mark. It was a nice 2-week break.
And so, tell us where you were and what it was like. What it was like there. You were in Uzbekistan, right?
I was in Uzbekistan. Yeah, I was in an extremely, extremely hot country. I would not recommend going there in June or July or August, but I was there in June, and right. It was a very good trip. I've been traveling for the last year, as you know, and I'm sure some people listening know. But most of my trips have been more isolated in terms of geography and stuff. This was more of a city travel trip, so more of history, culture. Uzbekistan was a big country, or at least the cities in Uzbekistan were big during the whole old Silk Route trading route history, and cities like Tashkent, Bukhara, Samarkand, and Kiva were very sort of storied cities back in the day. So I was there for more of a history culture tour than anything else.
Did you notice anything about how connected everyone is there, their use of technology or media?
The phone service was very, very extremely cheap. I mean, I was there 10 days, and I updated. I mean, the first day I land, this is what I do on our travels. I got a local SIM card. I'd unlocked iPhone. Actually, I unlocked my iPhone 4. It's amazing how easy it is to unlock phones, even if you don't know how, even if you're not a technical person these days.
Wow.
There's this thing called TurboSIM, which you can get for like $10 that you have to go through 5 steps and with the new SIM that you buy, and voila, here's your iPhone unlocked. And anyway, I used that, so that was kind of interesting. That was the first time I used it. There's something called TurboSIM. If you Google it, you'll see what it is.
So you didn't get another phone. You just were able to use your iPhone there.
I was just able to use my iPhone there. Yeah, and the phone service there was very cheap. Even the internet was very cheap. I spent a grand total of like $15 over 10 days, and was always connected and was always using Twitter, Facebook, or email, or all this stuff. So that was very cheap. Interestingly, people there don't know Facebook at all.
Wow.
Which is very different than some of the other countries I've traveled, even sort of remote countries I've traveled. I think people there use the Russian Facebook clone, which I can't pronounce the name of, but because a lot of them speak Russian, it used to be the former Soviet country.
Right.
They use that, whatever the biggest Russian social network is, and which actually turns out to be they completely ripped off the Facebook design. There were stories about it back then that I remember, and that's what they use. But internet is still early days. It's a police state. I mean, the dictator has been there since Uzbekistan got independence from the Soviet Union in 1991 or 2, whatever it was. And he's been the same guy that's been there. So it's a police repressed state. So free speech isn't there, which means that internet isn't necessarily the top of their priority.
Right. So, and what internet there is, I'm guessing, is there surveillance, or is just not widely available or too expensive?
Yeah, I don't think there's that much I don't know this. I don't know for sure. I don't think there's that much surveillance compared to some Middle East countries, because most of the sites that I was accessing were not blocked, unlike some of the other Middle Eastern countries I've been to. But it's just not as widely available. Internet cafes in big cities, sure. And people, and kids actually, it was funny, I was in Samarkand, and internet cafes are essentially configured for gaming first, internet like second or third in priority. What they don't have on TV is news. I mean, there's Uzbekistan, a couple of news channels that really don't cover anything newsy. So a bunch of people who can afford it subscribe to Russian cable channels that are quite widely available. And interestingly, people don't know that much about CNN. Even at the hotels that I was at, the English language news channel that was there by default was BBC, was not CNN International, which is also unlike most of my other travel. So that was kind of interesting. People don't read newspapers that much because really there's nothing newsy in those newspapers because it's not a free country.
Wow. Where do they get their news? They're either going to have to get state TV or subscribe to an expensive cable package to get other news. So
Russian, primarily Russian. So and that's if Russia carries Uzbekistan news, which it doesn't necessarily.
okay, well, so let's talk about this week's show. We're going to talk about Google Plus, the new social network that Google has launched that's kind of taking on Facebook a little more directly than everything they've tried before. We both tried it out a little bit. We'll also have Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land come on soon and talk about his take on Google Plus and how he thinks it'll compete with Facebook and other social networks. And then, in the same vein, MySpace, the former king of social networking, which has fallen very far, was sold to Specific Media for $35 million recently. There's been some looks back at, what happened to MySpace, what went wrong, and maybe some lessons for these new social networks. So let's start with Google Plus. Google announced this. Everyone kind of heard a little bit about it. They're saying it's a project. It's in progress. It's not fully baked. You can only get onto it if you have an invite or someone invites you to join. So there aren't a whole lot of people on it. We both got to check it out a little bit, and it looks, if you look at the stream on Google Plus, it does look a lot like the Facebook news stream. It's very news feed. It looks very similar. The difference is that you kind of create these lists, what they call circles of people, and you can break down your circles, and it's not just all friends. Facebook is very reliant on everyone goes into this big bucket of friends. You can split that up a little bit, but it's not obvious. Google Plus tries to make that really simple, that you have your close friends, your family, your work group, your baseball buddies, whatever it is, you can split that into circles, and then when you are sharing a piece of information or news or a status update, you can just target that at the people in that specific circle. So privacy-wise, it seems a little better. What's your take on it so far? Just taking a quick look at it, Rafat.
Yeah, thanks for actually sending me the invite last night so I was able to start checking it out.
It's like, I got an invite from a former intern at MediaShift, but it's like, it was is like hard to get.
Yeah, and I've been playing with this since morning. It seems pretty intuitive. A few things I'm just confused by. I think Danny Sullivan will have some answers to it maybe because he knows this stuff better than anybody in the world. And just a few things confuse me about the settings and stuff like that. The biggest thing that annoys me, and I hope it's temporary, is that all people can talk about on the social network is about Google Plus. All the stream, the whole stream is about Google Plus, which kind of gets annoying after a while. But I'm guessing, I mean, it's early adopters. That's what they're going to talk about because everybody's on trying it.
Yeah, it's an infinite loop of just what do you think about Google Plus, or what do you think about it? Well, yeah, I think this. I don't know. What do you think about it? I mean, that's really all there is on it right now. And
Or
there aren't
settings
all.
or hacks or hacks of here's what's to do, and like I accidentally subscribed to Robert Scoble, and oh my God, he posts five posts every second, and just it's just never ending.
Well, maybe if Google Plus can figure out a way to turn down Robert Scoble, that would be a big innovation.
I think people will pay for that, but also I don't know. I don't have any burning. It just I'm quite set on Facebook. I'm saying that now. Who knows? But it just seems that it doesn't necessarily. I don't necessarily see the need for a Facebook alternative. I mean, a burning desire that will help me jump off Facebook to Google Plus, but maybe I'm not seeing it yet. So, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean it seems that way. It seems like there's not enough to make it exciting enough to change. You know, I mean, there's got to be something that's compelling to make you really want to change and get into a new service, right? I mean, there's just, what's that I mean, there are a few things that are slightly better, but what's really making a huge difference? You know, that's the problem. There's nothing really groundbreaking, I guess.
Yeah, the concept of circles, okay, makes it easy. I think that Facebook hopefully will make it easier to manipulate the groups and stuff like that. I don't.
Right.
I have a lot of friends on Facebook, maybe more than I should have. And now, is there an easy way to manage them? The mass of people that I have, 1,300, 1,400 people that I have. I don't think they have that functionality yet, but they're probably going to be working on it.
Yeah, what you would think Facebook would be able to counter a lot of what's going on with Google Plus.
If it wants to. I mean, they have they certainly have no lack of resources. I think they will be distracted a little bit with their IPO and stuff, but they're such a giant company that the product team should be relatively relatively isolated from all of that.
All right, let's bring in Danny and get his take. Danny Sullivan began covering search engines in late 1995 when he undertook a study of how they indexed web pages. The results were published online as a Webmaster's Guide to Search Engines, and a pioneering effort to answer the many questions site designers and internet publicists had about search engines. Now, many years later, he heads up Search Engine Land, which covers search marketing and search engine news. Welcome to the show, Danny.
Hello.
Hey, Danny.
Hey.
I don't think we've ever, can you believe this? I don't think Danny and I have ever met.
We probably never have.
That's the most ridiculous thing in the world. But
that is funny. That's typical. Typical internet.
So we were just talking a little bit about the big topic of the week, which is Google Plus. And I know you kind of had a little bit of an extended thoughts about it when it first launched, which was yesterday. What's your thinking right now as far as what's strong about it and what could use more work?
My thinking is that the big challenge is whether or not people who are happily using Facebook are going to decide they need to go over there and start completely over. It's a lot of work to try to see if your friends are there, to invite them in, to get them to start shifting their behavior to this new place. If they don't do that, suddenly you're having to divide your attention up in two different places. And so that's probably the biggest challenge, that simply the inertia of it. It's very similar to the challenge that Bing faces when they've tried to take on Google. Yeah, you can do a search at Bing. You can get good results. Sometimes you can get better results than you get at Google. But if your habit is to participate at Google, you don't necessarily think, oh, I should go over and start using Bing. So I think that's one of their biggest challenges that they face. There are a lot of little small things. They haven't come up with a decent naming structure. They haven't clarified what happens with Buzz, where people who previously invested a lot of time already had done that sort of thing. They have this plus one sharing system that they already rolled out across the web, which is the equivalent of Facebook sort of like buttons that are out there, but they're not hooked up into Google Plus. So if you plus one something that you like on the web, that doesn't flow back into your Google Plus account, which is crazy to being absurd. That will probably change, but
yeah, that seems very strange. So basically, what you're saying is, if you see an article and you do a Google Plus one on it, it won't show up in your stream that goes to other people.
Exactly, and you can even, and this is probably the craziest of things, you can plus one something that somebody has put into Google Plus. Like if they've shared a link, you can say I like it by plus one-ing it. And that will not share out into your stream. You actually have to literally tune to share it out with other people, which in turn causes that thing to be reposted, and then it gets reposted as if it's coming from you, which is another kind of issue. So there's these structural things that they can work through. I think I'm really surprised, knowing that they've been working on this for over a year, that they don't have it more polished. A lot of it is great. A lot of it is really nice and it works out very well. But there are still some of these things that they say, well, we're still working on that. And I'm thinking, well, you've had 9 months to a year to be working on this. I expect it to be fully born and ready to go at this point.
Yeah.
One question I have, just of a minor thing. Danny, are the posts not showing up in chronological order, or is it kind of like the Facebook algorithm that they had where it sort of takes your best friends and start showing that instead of the whole feed?
It seems to be chronologically oriented based on what your friends are doing. So if somebody you're following makes a post, you see that. Someone else does a post that you're following, that gets dumped on top. Someone then makes a comment on a post that can, I believe, bring the post back up to the top, and you see that as well. And you're seeing everything. There's no filtering. Whereas, you know, the Facebook news feed is going to show you whatever the Facebook news feed decides you should be shown, which can be annoying because, you know, sometimes it's not showing you all the stuff that maybe you do want to see.
And what do you think about the privacy settings for this, the way that it literally at the very start is asking you to put people into circles? Do you think that that's something that, I mean, that does seem a little bit better than Facebook, where you just have this big, you know, Rafat saying he's got, you know, 1,200 people, and are they all really friends? You know, what are they really? They're just this big morass of people who ask to be friends.
Right. And one thing that you see resonating with a couple people, I've seen comments on this, is that, you know, perhaps this is a good reset. And in fact, I saw this in the beginnings of this about 9 months ago when Google was saying we're planning this circle type of thing. And it was exactly what I thought at the time, that potentially this lets you start afresh, start a whole new social networks now that I know how I should have done it, which was not admit everybody into being my personal friend and splitting it all up. So I think that will resonate with some people, especially people who do have a lot of friends that have admitted some. I suspect that a lot of the people that are talking about how this is great as a wonderful reset are also tech people or other people who are just really social media junkies. I don't mean that for everyone, but I think there may be a higher proportion of people who just have a huge number of friends who aren't really friends. Other people may, you know, not have an unmanageable number of people that they're dealing with. And Facebook does offer you some abilities to filter them out if you want to as well. So, you know, overall, I think it's a nice feature that you can have, and you can have this kind of selective sharing. I think it will definitely appeal to some people. But having said that, even with the dragging and dropping, I can be exhausted. I'm exhausted right now. I've got like, there's like 300 people who have added me, and then I'm going through and saying, well, this is great because I want to follow some of these people. I got to find time to decide which ones I want to use, and do they throw them into one circle or do I throw them into another circle just because it's nice to classify them, or do I just follow them all at all? And I'm tired.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yes, in a way you're resetting, but that's going to take a lot of effort to do it. And you can't pull people, you can't pull in your friends from Facebook, right? You can't report at the moment.
Right, exactly.
One of the questions I have in terms of product development from a Facebook perspective, do you think that Facebook could potentially be at least looking at making some of the circle thread that Google has picked up? Do you think they would probably be looking at developing some of those kind of features in Facebook?
I think, yeah. I mean, I see, that's the other thing, is that if this is so great, having circles and dragging and dropping people into it, I think Facebook could easily add that sort of thing into it. And so now what's the advantage, right? You know, I don't know that just having that kind of metaphor does it. And I think that Facebook's actually kind of ahead in this, in that they actually had groups that were set up and designed to do this sort of thing.
Right.
So if it takes off, perhaps they will accelerate that type of functionality. It is nice, but you know, it doesn't seem like it's a technological advantage that Google has. In contrast to the whole Hangouts video conferencing thing that they have, which does seem to be something that would be harder for that to happen.
Have you tried out the Hangout thing? So Hangouts is basically, it's you say you're going to start a Hangout, and your webcam comes on, and what, it's just random friends that you have can join in and do like a video chat with you?
Yeah, so you can, you know, you can say I'm just kind of hanging out and want to have other people join me, and you can send that to everybody or certain groups of people, and then you can they can all join in. You can have up to 9 other people, so 10 in all, who are video conferencing. And it's very clever in that when somebody talks, the main view shifts to the person who's talking. And in fact, it's so nice that when I saw it, I was thinking, I wish I could do podcasts using this sort of thing, right? You know, it'd be, if you could record it and let other people in on it, but you can't do that right now. Now, I've been watching people through my stream jumping in and doing these kinds of hangouts, and I did one myself, and you know, perhaps that will take off. You know, maybe this is going to be a new sort of social feature. Right now, I can't tell how much it's going to be a core functionality that everybody's going to love and use it for this reason, or if it's, hey, I want to try it out and see how it goes. You know, I can see that some people think this is great. This is the way I want to hang out with my friends. I tend to think this will be what the cool kids will be doing in the future. That's the way they want to socialize. Hey, let's all get together and do a hangout. And maybe, you know, especially if that takes off with younger people, that maybe if that takes off with younger people, that they will, you know, start using this for this reason, that they may seek out, you know, Google Plus because they want to have that kind of that kind of feature.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about the arc of all the different social networks that have come and gone, it seems bizarre that the next one would come from Google. Like, you'd think it would come from a startup, something different, something with a new way of looking at things. It just to be this kind of incremental.
It actually makes a whole ton of sense. And let's take search. Google was not the first mover there at all. They were the second, and you could even argue they were sort of the third mover that kind of came into the space. And then who would have thought that Microsoft was going to turn out to be the second place player to Google? When they first said they were going to have a search engine in 98, everybody kind of said, oh, well, they're coming into the space, and then they did nothing. But they kind of became the second player because they were the last one standing that could afford to do it. So now if you look at the social networking space, I mean, we've been through Friendster, we've been through MySpace, we've been through Facebook coming in and being this sort of second, third mover thing, built up this huge structure. It's tough for a startup to come in on that. Twitter, I think, is a unique exception, but Twitter does something very particular and doesn't, you know, go, you know, into the Facebook ambitions that they have. And so, you know, I think you see Google kind of playing the only one who could possibly do it type of thing. And to me, what's amazing is taking them so long to come out with something that looks possibly credible. But if they aren't going to do it, you know, I don't know another startup that's going to have a system where they have millions or hundreds of millions of people already into the system where they can kind of jumpstart it with the invites and everything else. So it perhaps is logical. For me, it's not unusual that they've come into it. What's going to be the real test is, does it really get a significant amount of share versus Facebook? Or does it just kind of sit there and tend to be this also-ran type of thing?
So MySpace was just sold to Specific Media from was owned by News Corp, who bought it in 2005 for $580 million, and it's now just sold to Specific Media for $35 million, almost in a fire sale where they're going to lay off most of the people. I guess Justin Timberlake is a part of this purchasing MySpace, but it's interesting to think about how, you know, as we were saying before about these kind of arcs of different social networks and how they've kind of come and gone. What do you think, Rafat? What do you think are kind of the lessons behind what happened with MySpace? I mean, where did they had hundreds of millions of users all over the world. What do you think went wrong?
I think that, there are a couple of lessons. One is that, and this is something that I've, in my very small little way, faced intimately myself, once a company gets bought, it just, there's a switch that turns off in the founders, and that's just the reality of it, whatever you want to do. And most 9 out of 10 acquisitions fail. So if you want to look at the larger arc of things, that's probably one of it. The second part of it is that it really was about how their product, they just completely lost control of their product. And that was not necessarily as part of News Corp. That was way before News Corp came in. And if you read Julia Angwin's book, Stealing MySpace, that was a really good book leading up to this, a little after up to the sale. You will see a lot of that and how what happened before they got sold to to News Corp. And you will see sort of how the threads of that played out after News Corp bought it. The Business Week cover story that just came out about the fall of MySpace covers the sort of what happened after the sale. So if you read both of those together, you'll see a lot of reasons why all of this happened.
I mean, part of what they were saying in the Business Week story was that, you know, they just lost focus, that there was just so many things they were trying to do. They were trying to do MySpace music. They were trying to have, you know, just they were just trying to add so many features. And they didn't, the one thing they did differently than Facebook is that they didn't allow developers to really create things. They wanted to create every feature themselves, which I would guess get kind of tiring after a while.
I think also it was some of it has to do with the leadership. Time and again, if you see companies like Google, like Facebook, the very headstrong founders that have a vision and can push their vision through despite objections of all kinds, have sort of and have a center, are the ones that have succeeded. I mean, Yahoo is an example. To some extent of what happens when there isn't a strong founder leadership that stays on. And I feel like MySpace had a little bit of that. The two founders kind of lucked into it, but weren't necessarily the strongest in terms of technical foundation or in terms of leadership capabilities. So that's just my read from following these people for a few years now.
What do you think, Danny? What's your take on MySpace and just its arc from becoming so popular and why it just dropped off the face?
It's hard for me to say. I really didn't watch over MySpace that closely. Personally, anytime I went into it, I just didn't really kind of get it. It always seemed kind of a mess to me, how it was all organized. It seemed to be focused around having pages, and Facebook seemed to be much more focused around building up the connections and a lot of the short sharing or the sharing of topics and so on. It would just seem that they really didn't react quickly enough to some of the stuff that was rising with Facebook. And I wish I could say more about it, but I just haven't tried to look or seen the distinctions between the two of them and how they've gone up or they've come down.
What about the role that the Google deal played with MySpace, where they had this kind of mm-hmm. that was a big money maker for them when Google basically became kind of the search for MySpace, and I guess that also might have been once it disappeared that really hurt them.
It was a big deal, and it was amazing how Google at the time was so concerned about MySpace and somebody getting tight in there that they cut this kind of a deal where they would allow, you know, that they would make that kind of a guarantee.
The guarantee was actually almost $1 billion over 3 years.
Oh, so, wow.
And my view now about the deal, while it was great for MySpace, I think at that point in terms of money, I think it hurt them, because what happened as soon as the deal happened is they went completely into autopilot because, oh, we have so much money now, we don't have to do anything. And I think from a product point of view, they completely let go after that because, well, they're making money, sitting, doing nothing, so might as well do that.
No question. Well, what do you guys think as far as the staying power of these social networks? You know, it seems like Facebook, you know, are they at the same place that MySpace was at? I mean, the fact that they've stayed independent, they could have sold out a number of times along the way for, you know, $1 billion or more. But they stuck to being independent. And I guess, Rafat, you're saying that that might be to their advantage.
Yeah, I think so. I think the 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I would have said Mark Zuckerberg needs an adult CEO and he should really step aside. A lot of when all this Facebook privacy stuff was happening and a lot of people were talking about, oh, we're going to move off Facebook and all that stuff. To his credit, he hasn't. So, and I do think there was a just a singular focus whether you believe it's ethical or not, that's a whole different debate, has put the company in the position that it is now. And it would have been very difficult to do that under somebody else. I mean, he's the singular driving force in the company.
One question for you, Danny, before we let you go. Rafat had even mentioned, what if Facebook decided to do their own search engine and really take mm-hmm. on Google? Have you thought about that, or do you think that's a possibility?
It probably becomes more a possibility now that Google is finally directly going up against them. But I think it's incredibly hard. And this may be my search bias, but I suspect it is harder for them to run a search engine than it is for Google to run a social network.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate you coming on to the show.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. Glad to be here. I really enjoyed it. Nice to talk with you and also with you, Rafa, for the first time. That was great.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer of PBS MediaShip, along with Rafat Ali. And we want to thank our special guest, Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land, for joining us as well. And thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to check out all the news, events, and polls over at PBS MediaShip at pbs.org/MediaShip and our sister site, IdeaLab at pbs.org/IdeaLab. We'll catch you next week.